Lost to Cast 253. I think I have that right. I'm pretty sure I have that right.
I think so.
Yeah, I think so too. We have a small group today.
Yes, missing some of our new regulars.
But we just had a very exciting experience with the GMG K-Ban Best Donut Contest.
Yes.
We'll get into that in a little bit.
That was very exciting.
This is very exciting. Very, very exciting. We're here with Stephanie Benenson.
Yes.
She's here to talk about the project Harbor Voices. The website is www.harborvoices.com. I'm also here with my regular co-host, Kim Smith. Thank
Good
you
morning.
For coming.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, Gloucester.
We're going to talk about all that other stuff, but we want to make sure. So Stephanie has a young child.
Yes.
So we want to get her in right now,
her
project. Could you explain Harbor Voices, how it came to be and what it's all about?
Sure, of course. Harbor Voices Public Art is a arts nonprofit that I just launched in September. I am a third generation Cape Ann artist, and my father and grandfather spent the majority of their lives painting on Cape Ann's harbors, and it inspired this piece. I went to get my master's at the Rhode Island School of Design last year, and when I graduated, I had developed this concept for a community-based public art nonprofit. And I entered it into a grant competition, and RISD funded this initiative for me to pilot Harbor Voices Public Art on Cape Ann.
RISD, would you say RISD?
RISD, the Rhode Island School of Design,
okay.
Yeah, in Providence. So Harbor Voices Public Art is falls under the category of new genre public art. It's public art that is fed from community voices. And the idea behind it is that we collect stories and we connect people to each other. There are three sort of main ingredients that that kind of come together to create this public art. One is we're collecting ancestral and recent stories of immigration into Cape Ann.
Oh, wow. Pat Dalpiaz would be very, very interesting. Pat,
yes, you would.
One of our regular contributors who was supposed to be here today is huge into genealogy and stuff like that. She has
She knows a lot about that.
So I would love to meet her. I've had, you know, I'm only one person right now at this point, but I've been doing some outreach into the public schools and just from people exactly as you just did saying, oh, if you want to collect some stories about immigration, you've got to meet so-and-so or you've got to meet so-and-so. And so while that's happening, I'm kind of meeting people for coffee and they're sharing stories. The storytelling sessions usually only take 5 minutes or 3 minutes. We ask people if they want to contribute. There's a form on harborvoices.com where you can write a quick few sentences or you can shoot us an email and I'll meet you for coffee and we'll collect the audio of your story.
That's so awesome.
So I'm not a historian.
You know, she first said her thing and I was like, what is this all about? Now I'm very excited.
Yeah, I think it's
this
awesome.
Is really cool.
Yeah, I think too.
Can I, okay, I'm going to let you go on, but I just had a couple things before I forget, because I will forget. Have you been to the Cape Ann Museum?
Yes, I'm on the board of the Cape Ann Museum.
Okay.
Yes.
Idiot, Joe. But that, okay, so it makes sense because the archives are, one of the best resources that so many people don't know about. Mm-hmm. Like Fred Buck down in the basement there, like you have a question.
Right.
And the research team down in the basement is just, his wife, what's Fred Buck's
Stephanie.
Wife?
Stephanie.
Mm-hmm. They're both amazing people and...
I spent a good bit of time down there in the Cape Ann Museum Library with Stephanie, and she helped me out a lot. And I sourced a lot of information and a lot of photography and vintage postcards from the library for my thesis that I included as part of this grant proposal. Wow. So there's a lot of history that goes into it. And then the other part of the project that I really love is that it's also ancestral history, but also recent stories of people who have just arrived here. And so what I'm doing is I'm kind of making connections between what's happened in the past and what's happening currently and connecting stories. You know, there's always a thread of commonality, I think, between a story from 100 years ago and a story from a month ago. You know, people moving here for love, people moving here for job opportunities, people moving here for educational opportunities, and to find the connections between, you know, different lineages and ancestries and also, you know, different ethnicities between the past and the present has been really fantastic. So we've collected 100 stories. Wow. The majority of them have been from younger people in the community. I've been doing some visual work with some kids at Veterans Memorial Elementary School, and then also there have been quite a few stories shared from kids at teens at Gloucester High School.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Okay, Junie Van Dyke. Have you been there?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, because I mean that's all. That's another obvious resource, right? Like the Rose Baker Center?
Yes.
Okay.
So Junie was a major inspiration for me. And actually a friend at the KPM Museum has just introduced me to her. And I'm hoping that we can talk a little bit more about the project.
Well, she would probably facilitate you meeting quite a few people.
Quite a few people there.
I mean, because if you just said that a majority of them are younger voices, if you needed a conduit to the older voices, seems to me.
Her quilting classes are just like filled with women, you know, and they're always talking about stories and new stories, old stories.
She's got incredible photographs. Back when we did the block parties, she had that. Remember that video of all the older people. Do you remember?
No, I didn't see that. I never saw
it. It was in
that.
The beginning. You probably weren't even on the blog yet.
No,
it was like
when
our team started the block parties, we had those the videos that we played on the brick wall where Passports was on Center Street.
Right.
And she submitted a short, and it was like a lot of these older folks, the photos that they had of when they came to this country or
she's got a lot, and also there are
some tiles that I saw. I visited Rose Baker recently and went on a nice little tour, saw some quilts, and also saw some beautiful tiles that some of the seniors had made there. It's really incredible.
That's part of that other project.
Yeah. Right.
Which is almost what I thought we were talking about.
Well, it's great. Well, so that's the thing.
You know all about her quilt project.
I do. Okay. Yeah, I do. I admire that work a lot. And I think that is also falls under the same category of public art that this project does. I feel like this is, this is the future of public art, as far as I'm concerned. And I think that it's really fantastic when people can really reach into a community and get the voices of the community to create a piece. Mm-hmm. And this piece literally is, I'm sampling audio from storytelling sessions in the community within Gloucester and Rockport and across Cape Ann.
I think it's so exciting that you're doing this. Thanks. Because I think there's so much public art that... like if you go around New York City or wherever, people are ripping down statues of, you know, just statues that are meaningless or whatever to the community. This is something that will, this is something that will never go away. You know what I mean? Like it's like I'd much rather have public art and public funding for public arts go to something like this that is, you know, preserving the community in a very fresh way and bringing it out from the basement of the Cape Ann Museum and into the public eye than, you know, a statue by, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Now you say this, right? Like, okay. It seems like everything that comes down, whether it's going to be a public installation of like a whatever it happens to be, a sculpture or something like that,
right.
95% of the time, there's huge outrage
because
all these people have their vision of what it
should be. Right.
But I couldn't imagine how you could, this could not be
right.
perfectly,
loved,
you
loved
know,
and
embraced.
Right, like Junie's quilts. You know
right,
what I mean? Like
exactly.
Everybody can love that. And
right.
It really brings something to the community. And it's really, I think it's beautiful what you're doing.
Thank you.
Yes,
I do think.
So where,
go ahead.
Where is the installation?
On December 8th and December 9th from 4 to 8 p.m. in the auditorium at City Hall, we'll have this audio-visual contemporary art installation. What it will be is it will be quotes and a piece of sound, what's called sound art, mixing stories and quotes together. So there'll be an audio experience. And every story that we've collected, I've promised everyone that each story will become a beam of art and a beam of light in the art installation. So every story that's shared is visualized with either a laser projection or a light projection. And so it'll be an experiential contemporary art installation. So you walk in the door and you hear the stories and you can see these beams of light appearing from every voice in the community that has shared their stories. And we're still collecting stories, and we have, I've matched the grant at this point, so Harbor Voices is going to continue into another project in the future, so I'm going to continue to collect stories and create work based on it. But this iteration will have, we're doing 5 or 6 field trips with some schools on Friday morning, and then Friday night from 4 to 8, and then Saturday as part of the Middle Street Walk, we are right after the Lobster Trap tree lighting. We're hoping people will come. You see that Lobster Trap tree light up, and then you come and experience light and stories in a different capacity at City Hall.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. Cooked. Wow.
This is amazing. What is it going to be on a loop at City Hall?
So yes.
Yeah,
so
if you don't happen to catch it at the beginning.
So the audio track is not a four hour commitment, right? It takes I'm telling people, so the field trips with the schools that I'm doing are 30 minutes.
Okay.
It takes probably 10 minutes. It's a 10 minute loop. You can stay for 2 loops if you want. You can stay for 1. But you go in, you hear the stories. We're creating an experience where you can get a sampling of. I would say the majority of the voices that we've collected, and then you can go on your merry way, hit dinner or whatever. You know, it's not a huge commitment. It's only a half an hour time commitment. And earlier in the evening, we are doing a special thing for people bringing families to the auditorium. So kids will be given their own lighting element, whether it be a flashlight or a laser, so that they can create their own beam of light to shine within the stories that other people are sharing. So that part of this is that, you know, when part of the research that I did when I was at RISD was that when kids look back on their own personal histories, they feel more grounded in the community, and they're more likely, they're, first of all, it builds resilience and self-esteem, but also they become more engaged with their community, and they feel part of a bigger conversation about local history. And so we want families to come and the kids to shine their lights around and to sort of understand that they're a beam of light, that their story, you know, their story is just as important as the stories that they're hearing about their ancestors.
It's going to bang it home for them.
Wow, that sounds
That's what I'm hoping. Reinforcing
that.
So beautiful.
Amazing.
Really?
Amazing. I'm so glad that you came here. I had no idea what we were in for.
Yeah, I knew. Harbor Voices. I mean, who knows what it could be, Harbor Voices. So
right. It's just that, Harbor Voices. Oh, it sounds nice.
Right.
You know?
I do love the name, actually. I really do love the name. So is Harbor Voices the name of this show, or is that the name of your nonprofit?
Like
this
the
is
umbrella.
The name of the nonprofit. And so what I'm waiting for the piece to... I'm finishing the audio piece right now for the installation and finishing the plan for the lasers and the lights. And once that's done, it's going to receive its own title. But Harbor Voices is, that's the name of the public art initiative.
Fantastic. Anything you want to add in closing? So anyone that's listening to this, www.harborvoices.com. It's that simple. You can go check out in more in depth for yourself. Yeah. And the dates again?
December 8th and December 9th from 4 to 8 p.m. In the Kairos Auditorium at City Hall. And also, if you want to follow our progress as we're creating the art, we're posting on Instagram very regularly now.
What are you on Instagram?
At Harbor Voices.
Okay. I'll follow you right now.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. This is great.
That was awesome.
Oh, I thought it was so interesting.
You know, she said, so she had contacted me, I don't know how long ago, it was a week or two ago, and asked to be on the podcast today. And I said, yeah, and the name of her thing was Harbor Voices. And in my head, you know, it's like, oh, it's another, another cute, thing.
Right.
And then she talks to us about the whole thing and played it. She played us a little snippet that we're going to share.
Just that little bit was beautiful to hear.
And then we grasped what it's all about, and it's really, really a cool.
It's very
idea.
Special, I think.
It is. It is not to be missed.
You know what? If you're a graduate of Rhode Island School of Design, is like the top school of design in the whole entire country. So
is that true?
Yeah, or one of two.
Not the New York Institute of.
No, Rhode Island School of Design.
Really?
Yeah.
So you would think.
Right. So you would think. I mean. Anybody who's just gotten their master's degree there and then being supported with a grant from the school,
serious business.
That's serious. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Credentials.
Yes. Serious credential.
Credentials flying out her butt. That was awesome. She's really... My impressions of her, very sincere person.
And also just, and very passionate about
it. Passionate and in it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, when she mentioned that her father and her grandfather were painters, I'd like to find out more.
Yeah, right.
Is that her married name, or I wonder how we can find out more about her?
Well, you'll be able. If you follow her on Instagram, you could send her a private message and do a little bit more investigative thing. And you know, maybe if you want to take the lead on this, and she has any stuff that you want to post, like make posts or whatever.
Yeah, I'd love to.
The pen is lighting up. It's distracting.
Is that a laser pen?
It is a laser pen. I don't know.
Why is it lighting?
We needed to use it for the testing because we just got done with the GMG Cape Ann Best Donut Contest.
I know, that was pretty intense.
Well, there was a intense competition. We started last week. We put out, and it was sticky to the top of the blog, that we were going to take the top. I said originally that we're going to take the top four nominations for best donut.
Donut, right.
And as it turns out, the nomination period came through, and it was overwhelming that it was overwhelmingly Brothers Brew was the people's champion. They garnered 28 votes. The next close ones of the people's champs were Donut Jim's with 7, and Market Basket got 2 votes. Zeke's got 1 vote, and Willow Rest got 1 vote. We didn't include them because
one vote is not enough to warrant.
And Willow Rest, I've had Willow Rest, the little cider donuts that they make there.
Yeah.
They're phenomenal, but it's not a donut shop.
Right? You know, do they make them all year round? Also,
they may, but they're not a donut shop. You know what I mean? This is supposed to. You know, be an example of like a bakery kind of type of place.
Right.
And Zeke's is a coffee shop, so they're not known for their donuts. So no slight meant for anybody.
Because also Last Stop, she makes really good donuts.
But
she only makes them like sporadically. Like she'll make pumpkin donuts or cinnamon donuts at this time of year, but very sporadically.
Yeah, no,
so.
You can't. Yeah, so you want it to be more of a
right.
So anyway, I want to thank our judges, my nephew BJ, Wayne Berger, James Eves, and Craig Kimberly were the judges. We voted on texture, a potential 0 to 10 points for texture, a visual presentation, 1 to 15 potential points, and taste, 0 to 50 potential points. In first place, Brothers Brew with 296 total points. Absolutely devastated the competition. Second and third place, you might as well call them a tie, but only five points separated them overall. Market Basket with 255 points. And Donut Jim's with 250 points.
Okay.
Well, so
very close.
Very close.
First,
very close.
Second and third place.
Yeah. Very close for second and third place. There was no. There's no losers. To be nominated.
Right.
Just like they say, the cliche of the Oscars.
Yes.
Just to be nominated, you're a winner.
Yes.
But taking home the People's Choice based on nominations, Brothers Brew, and that carried over in the taste test.
Yes. Oh my goodness!
So there you go.
I'm sorry I couldn't get extra Brothers Brew today for me.
Okay, I'm going to let you answer this. Why would I be disappointed?
Because they did not have the today. Sometimes they make them. Sometimes they don't. Is the maple bacon donuts? And I asked if they had one this morning, and they hadn't made them today. But
which is astounding to me.
They don't make them every day, and so also because they sell their donuts so quickly. Like I could only get 4 Brothers Brew donuts, cinnamon donuts, because they butter crunch, because the other ones weren't ready yet, so they had sold a couple of trays already, and so they were waiting for more to come out. So
I have to believe that we put over $1,000 into Brothers Brew pockets over the past week,
yeah,
with the
nominations,
between the nominations, the continual updating of the spreadsheet.
Yes.
And the Facebook presence, there were so, how many people said, "Where's Brothers Brew? What's Brothers Brew,
right.
Where it
right.
is, and saw the right. overwhelming response over it, right. and that puts it into people's heads.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, if you're in Gloucester, you know, wouldn't actually think of making a special trip to Rockport. Except for if you're me, and I do make special trips over to Rockport.
Well, there's a lot of people that don't go over the bridge. Yeah, and don't leave.
The opposite direction.
Yeah, you know, there's quite a few. But in the past, I'd say in the past 2 years, it seems, maybe three, there's been this kind of thing of like gourmet donuts, like more in the cities, the big cities. Like, what's the name on that that jug right down there? You can probably see it from where you are.
Union Square Donuts.
Union Square Donuts.
Okay. Liv goes to Donut Planet. Planet Donut.
Is that in Boston?
No, that's in New York City. Donut. I'm just saying, it's like.
There are these.
The donuts there are like $7.
Right.
And sometimes she brings them home, and I'm like, why? I don't want you to spend that kind of money. Brew is just as good.
Right, yeah. I mean, I never really kind of took note until you brought that time, that maple bacon donut right. from Brothers Brew. And then I was like, wow.
Oh, right. You really stood up for attention for that one.
You know what? So what really stood out to me was that I really believe that there is room in this town, in the town of Gloucester, mm-hmm. for a gourmet donut maker.
Oh, like in New York City or Boston?
In Rockport.
Well, the thing is, like at Donut Planet and Union Square Donuts, it's donuts. Donuts, donuts, donuts. Like Brothers Brew has a wonderful like coffee shop. They sell tons of other kinds of baked goods too, and sandwiches.
Yeah, well, Dunkin' Donuts, which didn't get any nominations, but they have they're called Dunkin' Donuts, but they also have croissants and they have bagels and they have all.
Did you know
they're
actually thinking about changing their name and dropping the donuts and just calling it Dunkin'? Did you know that?
I did not know that. Yeah. Nothing would surprise me with them anymore, though.
I don't think they should do that, but
I think that's ridiculous. I think whoever, like marketing wise, is thinking of doing that is ridiculous.
I think they've tried.
What is the purpose?
I think they've tried it in a few places. I don't know if they've decided what they're going to do.
That's kind of silly.
Yeah. But you know what the reasoning is? They call it Dunkin'. Then that means you can dunk anything, not just the donuts. You know what I mean? I guess. I don't know. That's
so outrageous. Like, do they need to do anything? Like, you know, they already have them on every corner.
Right.
And there's people that still go there, which is, you know, whatever. People are entitled to go.
So have you been to Union Square Donuts?
I haven't. Janet, hashtag Jan.
Oh.
She's a friend of the podcast, a friend of the whatever. And she brought us down the wharf. She brought us a jug and a couple of the donuts, and they were on par with Brothers Brew, And then I've heard of, and I can't think of the one in Boston. There's a couple places in Boston that are doing these upscale donuts.
Okay.
I should mention also George Schlichty and a couple of my lobstermen that are a couple of my other lobstermen that are from like the Marblehead area, Nahant area, mentioned Kane's Donut in Saugus. And I had heard in town a lot of other people had mentioned Kane's Donut to me. I had never been there, but
I wonder if they're close, because I'm always going back and forth to Boston.
I think it's in a weird location. It's been there for like 50 years, but they all rave about Kane's. I've never been there.
Next time I'm going that route from the Kendall Hotel to Gloucester, I'll put it on my maps and just see if it's anywhere nearby.
You know the Saugus, the causeway between the airport, the Rotary, and Lynn?
Mm-hmm.
Down that causeway going towards Lynn, in that kind of neighborhood, like, you know, one of those lefts right there before you get to Lynn.
All right. Interesting. Okay.
It's not that far off, but I may not be.
All right. You know, well.
It would be great if in your travels.
Right, yeah. I knew you would like that if I, you know, not that you're a super donut
person. I'm not a big donut guy. I ate one of those donuts. I'm like,
I'm struggling right now. Yeah,
so. But anyway, it was great. It's great to have all those guys in the room.
You can't say that on a donut cast.
Well, I mean, some people just Brothers Brew. How many times can I say I love Brothers Brew maple bacon donuts? Two bites of it, I'm good. But it is amazing. Yeah, you know, they are amazing. And to me, if I had my vote, that Brothers Brew maple, maple bacon donut. There's nothing I've had any donut, anywhere,
any donut anywhere
that would compare.
Well, that would have been funny if I brought six of those for the judging, wouldn't it? Like,
I have a feeling if you brought those, I don't know.
Everybody would be in a coma anyway.
Everybody would be in a coma. Stephanie. So we're going to go back to Stephanie. So when you know she left because she had her child to take care of, the girl that's doing Harbor Voices. But she had mentioned that she had to get to today was her child was at Cape Ann Lanes for a bowling birthday party or something.
Oh, yeah.
But we just wanted to do a shout out to Cape Ann Lanes because they really.
It's super fun.
Like, it's great.
I don't know what it looked like before. I've only seen it in the new.
Yeah, it was cool. It's always cool to have every community that has a functioning bowling alley. It's a cool thing to have.
Right, it's lucky.
And we had it growing up, which is nice.
Yeah.
But these people just took a kind of a dated, a little bit. You know, rough around the edges because it just, you know, old people who had owned it forever, they got kind of towards the end of their cycle of being there and hadn't freshened it up in some time. And these people took it over and really freshened it up and modernized it. And it's just, we're so blessed to have it in our community. And it's such a great place for birthday parties for kids.
Kids,
you know,
just love
to go there when you have young kids and you're looking for something to do. It's one of those great things.
It's that certain age. Like, what would you say? Like, 3 to, you know, I don't know, like, all the way up to...
You know something? Bowling is kind of... I mean, you lose... Once your kids get to be teenagers, they don't want to hang out with you anyway.
Right.
So, it's a great place for them to go with their buddies between that time. So, when you're younger, you go with your kids. Then they get to be a little bit older. It's kind of place they can go...
Right, it's a safe place to drop them off.
Yeah, middle school. You just drop them off for a couple hours. The parents go run some errands, come back and pick them up. And then, you know, maybe like... Maybe it's not cool for them when they're in college or whatever, and then they come back, and then they have their own kids.
And they have and kids, and they
the recycle starts up again. Just like Fiesta, the different cycles of Fiesta for someone. Like, you're a kid, and you like, it's, you know, the rides and the and all the stuff, and then, you know, walking in the parade, and then, you know, then you get to be a teenager, and it's all about, like, drinking on the beach and, and making out with that girl for the first time, you know, watching the fireworks and... And you know, whatever, and coming of age, and then it gets to be of drinking age. Then you're in you're celebrating in the bars, and maybe you're rowing or walking the greasy pole, you know, all that, all the testosterone and estrogen that's raging during Fiesta, and then you have kids, and then you're taking them. You know, it's that cycle. It's
so funny that you said that because it's like at the perfect time of year too for all that testosterone and estrogen because it's like. The summer, the winter's over, you know, it's just probably, like, I wonder if there's a lot of babies been born in Gloucester.
Oh,
if you counted June plus 9 months, you know what I mean? July,
I'm
August,
sure,
September,
like,
October, November, December, January, February, March. I mean, if there's a lot of March babies in Gloucester.
I bet. No question. Yeah, that is always like, it's just like when you're in college. Remember when you're in college and you know, it's all cold and misery, everything's wet and everything else, and like you get that random one 73 degree day in like April after you've been holed up all year and every kid is outside like suntanning and throwing frisbees and like that day is like that night.
That's awesome.
Yeah, everybody's getting laid that night, you know. It's just that's just the way it is, and it's like everything is just raging. Like, you know, you go, you know, and then when you get out of college and you're that's the, like, on a weekend day. Say you get a really warm marathon Monday.
Right,
oh my God.
Right,
forget.
Right.
Everybody's getting laid.
Yeah.
So
I'm thinking everybody's outside and you're thinking everybody's getting laid.
No, because they're outside watching the marathon at the bars on Boylston Street or along the parade route, you know, and then you know, one thing leads to another, and it's just like, forget about it. Lights out. So there's that. We announced the winners. You went to the Dead in the Water.
Oh, yes. Very outstanding.
Thing. You want to talk about the filmmaker?
Yeah, the filmmaker is David Witkower. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, but he is a very successful documentary filmmaker. He's from Rockport, and that's why the film was premiered at Rockport High School. And several years ago, he premiered his film about the Coast Guard, even though it was about the a Coast Guard story in San Francisco. He still premiered it in Rockport, just because it's his hometown. Mm-hmm. So if you go to his website, which I put a link into yesterday, and I will on the post today, if you go to his website, you can learn more about him. But it's just very, did an outstanding job, and makes you want to, you know, get behind the community and help with what's going on. So, there we go.
All right. You had, I think, one of the posts of the week with the North American River Otters last night. The photos you captured were awesome. It was so great.
Thank you. It took a while to get those. They're very elusive, the otters, and they don't show up regularly at the same time in the morning, so you could be standing there for 3 hours waiting for the otters to come. But and it was just wonderful to see them like go from eating little frogs and tadpoles to suddenly like catching these big giant eels. I mean, the eels were like 3 and 4 feet long, and I didn't even know there were eels. And the day before when I was filming, like I was standing in the tall grass where then the next day they were catching the eels, and I was like, oh my god.
Would you have like waders on, like hunter boots or something?
No, sometimes I'm like just have flip flops on because
really?
I know, but
and
I'm gonna
eels, like,
yeah, like I didn't
biting you?
Right now I'm gonna be wearing waders because everybody's always like, but you know the reason why I have flip flops on a lot when I'm filming in the summer is because if sand or rocks get stuck in your shoe while you're trying to film, it's so, so irritating. But with flip-flops or, you know, like sandals, the sand just falls out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, anyways, but next year I'll be wearing waders, I think. So, but anyways, they're beautiful, beautiful creatures. They're so playful.
So fun to watch.
Yeah, they're really fun to watch. And they play with each other. They have a whole, you know, push each other off of things, and one will hang over, you know, that wooden crate thing. It looks like a wooden crate, but it's actually an old farm structure. They'll hang over that and play kind of hide and go seek with their siblings. I mean, it's just really, it's beautiful to see. But one thing I did want to mention is, since I put that post up, people have been saying that they are seeing them everywhere. Like, friends wrote in from Wheeler's Point, Anasquam, Rockport, different areas of West Gloucester. So, you know, we're connected with all these wetlands around here. So it's very easy to see how, because where are all those, so for example, those two families that I was filming in Rockport, they can't just stay in that one area because there's not enough food to support them. So they have to spread out, you know what I mean? So it's very, you know, we could just be seeing them even more so. It's very exciting.
What's cool to me, one of the main things that's really cool to me about the blog is we have a timeline of documented
stuff for wildlife.
It started 10 years.
That's right.
I can clearly point,
because
we're recording all this stuff and there's dates on all these posts and stuff like
They're all dated.
In in another month, it's going to be 10 years.
Oh, seriously? Wow.
Yeah, December 29th.
Wow.
In another month, it's going to be 10 years. And there's such a clear explosion in certain populations that have happened in our lifetimes, in 10 years in our lifetimes.
Right.
The herons are an example. The black-crowned night herons, another example.
The snowy egrets.
The snowy egrets.
The gray egrets.
Seeing the
beavers.
The beavers.
The beavers is one.
The otters I feel like it's in the beginning stages of a resurgence, but it would not surprise me if 5 years, the coyotes obviously, huge explosion in 10 years.
Right. All over coyotes, yeah. What, there was one, guess what else I saw over in West Gloucester? A mink. Have you ever seen a mink?
I wouldn't know what a mink looks like.
Like, I didn't know, like, I was with Liv and her friends, and they wanted to see the otters.
And you're sure it wasn't
I'm just positive.
You know what I was going to say?
Well, beaver or weasel.
No.
No.
What's the really sharp fangs, and they said they're in the same family.
Oh.
Fisher cat.
No, it wasn't Fisher cat.
They look similar, though, don't
they? Yeah. No, well, the mink was long and skinny.
Okay.
And Fisher cats are
a little stockier.
Yeah, stockier. So, no, it definitely was a mink. And because I was with Liv and her friends, and we all saw it run by, and they were like, "What is that? What is that?" So I found images of it, and we all confirmed that we'd seen a mink. So, but that was very exciting. I'd like to see more minks.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, I think it's confusing for people. Like one of these days, once I get enough photos, I'm going to put up a post. So, because a comparative size post, because otters are the biggest, you know what I mean? Then beavers, and then minks, and then muskrats. You know what I mean? So I think it would be good for people to see that. So if they see something in their yard, it can help them identify it.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but I think it's so exciting. People are seeing them everywhere. You've seen them in the... These are all sightings at freshwater, but they do go and they do spend a good deal of time in salt water, and you've seen them in salt water. Where you're seeing them, it's salt water, right? You've seen them a couple times.
I saw them. Yes, I saw them twice.
Twice.
Like at least 3 years in between each one.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Like to see them and the way they played and interact was unlike anything I had seen in the past.
Yeah.
Just incredible, incredible. And like, I wish that there was a place out in the wilderness that you could put a huge lucite box with a viewing station that I could sit in there
and just watch
otters play around because they're that cool. Yeah. We're going to get off of the otters right now because we've
talked. Well, one thing I would just like to say is, I mean, it's kudos to Cape Ann that we have this resurgence of wildlife, because if our water was polluted, we wouldn't be having, if our wetlands and waterways were polluted, we would not be having this resurgence.
There's definitely something to it. And that must be with the mandated sewering. There has to be. Because everybody used to just dump their poop and along with their poop was their detergents and everything else that was going down the drains.
Right, and that would be very...
And that would be toxic harmful, and stuff like that, right? And
right.
Then now with, you know, there was a, I don't know how long ago, but it was like it may have been federal mandate that came down that said, you can't do what you're doing. You can't just pollute, you know.
Right.
This has to go through some type of system. Someone could speak more clearly to it, but I know that would probably
be an interesting podcast, I think, a podcast guest.
So I'm going to talk about this because I think it's funny, and we're going to say it's definitely funny, and I'm glad for a listener that has a sense of humor and everything else. I got the email, and it speaks to what we've spoken about a million times about how diverse our readership is.
I know what you're
going to say. You know what I'm going to talk about.
Oh, my God.
So I sent it to you, because I took the thing and I sent it to you because...
The butterfly person. Who doesn't like butterflies. He's not a butterfly person.
Right.
He's not anti-butterfly. He just thinks I'm posting too much about butterflies.
But let me put out the whole thing. So I get this email, and the title in the post, in the email, is Butterfly. And the person simply says, "Can we slow down already? Enjoy your blog daily and have so for years, but this is getting painful, like hangover and the squirts in the same day painful. Thanks." And I really didn't understand what he was talking about. I go, "I don't understand. Do you mean the butterflies bother you?" And the person replies, "All the stories on the butterflies, too much. Very nice lady, but come on, man." And so my response to him, because this is something that comes up online all the time, I go, it's funny to me that it drives you that nuts that you can't scroll past those posts like I do. Do you think I give a fuck about the butterflies? We have a very diverse group. Some people hate all the stuff that I write. There's people that whenever I post something that I think is really fun, I'm going to elaborate But you know, sometimes I write something that I think is really funny, and I get it, and people say, "Why? What's wrong with you for writing that? This is unbelievable. This is disgusting, or whatever." I wrote. I continued on saying, "I'm sorry it bothers you so much. Believe me, as many people that can't stand the butterflies, there are that many more that live for it." Yeah. And it's true, because a testament to your fundraising for your film, there's been more of an outpouring of support for this film than probably anything else, maybe in line with Felicia's book, right? So, but other than that, there's nothing that compares to the support that you've received for this film. The people that wait and anxious, and if there was nothing else but your posts on butterflies, that would be enough of them on the blog. But the reason Good Morning Gloucester has the huge readership it is because there are posts that some people really love that. Yeah. They might find me funny. There's some people that love art stuff of what Catherine posts about, and you know, all the interesting stuff that she writes. Marty and Bridget and Nicole's stories about her family and the stuff that she posts. Yeah. I mean, Charlene and Donna, how they're always at all these local events and covering them for us. Yeah. You know, David's man on the scene and Manny Simos's Smiles series. Yeah. There's all this awesome stuff, and that's what makes Good Morning Gloucester.
I agree.
But I just thought, you know.
I know.
The guy wrote back. So the guy, after all that writing back to him, like I find it funny that it drives you that nuts that you can't just scroll past it. Yeah. And he writes back, "That was a great fucking answer," which I was so happy that he wrote it back there. Yeah. That he got it. He gets it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I just have to scroll past this. You know. And he's not saying, "Screw you, I'm not going to come back to the blog anymore." Right. He's like,
maybe I can scroll past.
Yeah.
Because you know what, for me, I worry about that sometimes. Like, you know, is this too much? Because people send me articles all the time about butterfly stuff too. Yeah. And so I have to figure out like how much of it I can post. And it's just really, I don't want to. But for example, this year, like this was a phenomenal monarch migration. So we haven't seen anything like this in 5 years. So if you went back last year, I hardly posted anything about monarchs, you know, or the year before. Whatever.
Well, we were actually talking about you were scared because there were so few. And you're thinking, is this in direct correlation to Monsanto?
Yeah. Well, there is all that still going on, and the population swing fluctuates. And people need to know, in the 70s, they counted the butterflies in the billions.
Yeah.
And now they're only counted in the millions. So when you have these, you know, uptakes.
But if you took it just based on last year, and you extrapolated, this is directly because of that. And then you have this. And if you just had last year's data and this year's data, then you would say,
everything's
a resurgence. Right. Everything's great.
Right, because that article that you sent me that I didn't post, the reason why I didn't post, it was, you know, doom and gloom about the butterflies going extinct, which isn't exactly good science anyways, because they'll never go extinct. We might not see them in the numbers that, I mean, I shouldn't say never, but they're not on danger of being extinct because there are many. From the North American population, many have repopulated all over the world. There's a North American butterfly population in New Zealand. There's a North American butterfly population in Hawaii because they've been blown offshore or whatever. But my point is that article that you sent me was actually, I was thinking about posting, and then I saw that it was from 2016. You see what I mean? So things things come up for people online, and they think it's current. I've been tricked like this before. You think it's current,
but the
article's from like 4 years ago. So you know, you just have to be very careful. But anyway, so I'd love to meet the guy who wrote. I'd like to thank this, and I'd like him to know that I do worry about this as well.
Well, I wouldn't worry about it too much because I think he got the point.
Yeah,
and he was cool about it.
He was
which
very
was
cool
great,
about it.
You know,
that's why I told you.
I was hesitant to forward that to you, I was hoping that you would get the humor in it.
Yeah, I do.
And you know, but it also keeps us grounded and like, oh, you know, maybe you know, I have to be cognizant of this because sometimes I have to pull myself in off of certain things that I'm doing. You know,
I try very hard to create a balance, and I would just like to say we've been writing a lot about monarchs this year, but that's because it's really. There's been no monarchs to photograph the last 3 years, so
you know
what I mean? So
So there you go. You went to the Cape Ann Farmers Market winter market. What do they call it? Harvest Market. Harvest Market, and the next one is going to be called something else. I'm sure.
It must be Christmas because it's December.
Holiday. Can't say Christmas.
Right. 23rd. That's on the 23rd of December, and that might seem late, but the farmers market is very food oriented. Right. So you could stock up on your for food for your holiday dinner.
And this is at the UU.
It's at the UU. Okay. It's a short little window of time, 10 to 1. I wish I could have stayed, but I was running home to babysit, and so I just quickly ran in, said hello, took pictures, and ran out.
But you also,
so it was awesome.
You mentioned that the one that's coming up is going to be on December 23rd, which is 2 days before Christmas, obviously, the day before Christmas Eve, when people are buying a lot of stuff for their holiday dinners.
Right, and it's last, and also, it's kind of close to Christmas, so if you need any last-minute gifts.
Exactly.
Because there's other things there. Of course, there's tons of beautiful, beautiful food, but, you know, there's jams and sauerkraut and...
Do they have the people that make the, like, the
Pigeon Cove Ferments was there.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, they were there. Tatiana's Treats, beautiful desserts.
The candle makers or anything like that?
No, I didn't see candle makers. I went through very fast, like I told you. But there was fresh goat cheese. Did you see my little post about Diane Corliss?
I didn't read it though.
Yeah, she's no longer our. So she was there. She has a new path in life, minding goats and making cheese. She's working for a woman from Newbury, I think it is.
So did you take the opportunity to invite her onto the podcast and bring some goat cheese for us to sample? You didn't do that?
No, but I have her contact information. I certainly could do that.
Well, as you know, kind of like the producer here.
Right.
Well, you're not really a producer.
No, not really. But, no.
But you, but like as a community liaison.
Right. I'll ask her. Because she's really sweet, and she just really took the lead last year with helping with the piping plovers on the beach. Did you know that? She was one of two Gloucester dog officer or you know animal control officers. Excuse me. So she and Chief McCarthy were on the beach practically every morning, and if you called her, she would come and she would help.
Take a shift.
Yeah,
she needed filling.
Well, no, she wasn't. She was working as the dog officer, animal control officer. But she was very, 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 very caring about the plovers and very interested in, you know, helping them survive. So, she's very, very lovely person. I'm sorry. She's no longer.
But goat cheese.
Yeah. Okay. Goat cheese. Okay. I will. Get right on that.
I'm a big fan of goat cheese.
Okay, well, I didn't know that.
We need to get some figs and goat cheese.
Okay.
And make good figs and do them on the smoker.
Mm, okay.
Smoked figs.
It's called Dancing Goats. Have you heard of that business? No. I think it's called Dancing Goats.
No, but so she wants to bring some goat cheese for us,
okay.
We will talk about it. So we always do. Listen.
Right. I'm going to make a goat.
We don't bang this drum enough.
Right.
If you have a product,
especially food,
and you want us to sample it and talk about it, you need to like bring some in and invite yourself onto the podcast. Get a hold of me, and goodmorninggloucester@yahoo.com, and invite yourself on, and we will set you up to come in and sample your treats.
All right.
See,
now I have a reason because I'll tell her I posted her on the blog and would she, you know, and send her the link to the blog.
We'll give her some press. We'll give her some publicity.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Figs stuffed with goat cheese. Huge fan. I didn't mention this at the top of the podcast, but I'm going to mention it right now. Cape Ann Community Cinema sponsors the podcast in a way that they basically give a couple of tickets for the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
That if you share the podcast on Facebook and tag us in it, you can win two tickets to a movie at Cape Ann Community Cinema.
Do we have a winner this week?
Yes, we do. Let me see. Oh yeah, it's Paula Ryan O'Brien.
Oh, okay, awesome. O'Brien. Very nice.
Yep, she's a winner from last week, so you can come and pick up her tickets. So we're going on to the big topic this past week, plastic bag ban was passed.
Oh, yes. So excited about that. I was not at the meet. You know what? This week was very difficult for me. It's my last week of getting all my gardens to bed.
Put to bed.
So when I get home...
This is great for me. Because now I have more access to you to do midweek podcasts with Things Slow Down at the Wharf. I like that.
So what happens to me usually is I'm so delirious. I just fall into... I take a bath and fall into bed. So... And then Tom makes me dinner, which is really nice.
God bless Tom.
So... yeah, so I did not go, but I heard it was very, very, very good, solid vote, 7-1, and it passed. So, you know, just kudos to Melissa Cox and Greg Verga, because I think it was Greg Verga who originally wrote the wrote it, and then it was and then Melissa Cox, took the reins, and then we have Ainsley Smith, Eric Majors. One Ocean, One Love, Jamie. There's two other people on the Clean City Commission whose names... I put it in a post. It, the picture that I posted with the plastic bag has the names of everybody in the Clean City Commission.
Ah, nice.
I believe. It's, you know, under the caption of the photo. So,
nice.
Clean Gloucester Commission, yeah. So we're very, very blessed to have Ainsley and her crew there.
We were talking a little bit... off air about I was talking about it I don't, I'm not sure if you were you actually had excused yourself for a second but I was talking to Stephanie who of the Harbor Voices project about how there's always resistance to change and we had spoken about a couple examples so there was some this was not a unanimous thing originally.
No.
And there are some issues that, like, and it kept being brought up, like older folks downtown that don't have someone to necessarily bring them to the market. They go to the market themselves by foot, and they need to carry the stuff back. So paper bag may or may not be, like, an easy thing to sling through their, you know, put on their fingers and have multiple bags to get home.
Right.
But there are solutions. It's just more of an education thing and to get to get through like a reusable bags that you take from your house that they're inexpensive and that they actually can carry more efficiently than the
plastic because the handles rip on the plastic
because the hand the handles or something sharp pokes through and that stuff goes all over your car you have to double bag them. Those reusable bags are very sturdy. Well, so once people, I think that the point I'm trying to make is that I think that once these people that were kind of really against this because it's a change,
change.
I think once they start using the reusable bags, they're going to see that actually it's a lot easier for them to carry.
Yeah.
A lot less because those straps on those bags are a little wider and less painful.
They less cut into your skin.
So
no, I agree, and I think
it's just like smoking when in the beginning of them saying that we're not gonna be able to smoke in restaurants and bars. Even in my head, way back then, I was saying, and I don't smoke. I can't stand smoke, but I can remember thinking in the very beginning times that Jesus, this is kind of a personal they're just taking people's rights away, and stuff like that. But now. You can't, and I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way, even the ones that thought, like I did, that this is taking someone's personal thing away, that you couldn't even imagine someone smoking in a restaurant right now.
Right. I mean,
On an airplane.
Right. And think of, I know, remember? I mean, it used to be so horrible.
Yeah.
And, but I think now I've heard talk of people banning smoking on the beach. And at first I was like, well, I don't know if that really is cutting into personal. But I'll tell you something. I have many times set up on Pavilion Beach to film the Greasy Pole Walkers, get all set up, make a little niche for myself. You know, there's like 10,000 people on Pavilion Beach. I'm all ready, and somebody lights up a big cigar standing right next to me, and I'm like choking the whole time. But you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know what is right and what is wrong. And
that's kind of an extreme situation, though, isn't it? Because like you're set up. So yeah, in that position, that is like focal on the thing. So for you, it's an inconvenience to have to move.
But wait, but think of all the people sandwiched together on Good Harbor Beach or whatever beach it is. You know what I mean? You put your beach blanket down, you got all set up, you got your kids and whatever. You know, I'm just thinking, what's the next step going to be? And then will people say in 10 years, they say like, can you imagine people used to smoke on the beach and leave their cigarette butts there? And, you know, I don't know.
It's a fair point. You know?
I don't know what's going to happen with that. But it's interesting to think about.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot worse things that you could do, too. So.
Yeah. You brought this up as a pop-up bookshop from the owner of Andover Bookstore and Cabot Books in Beverly.
Yes, so I have never been to Cabot Bookstore, but I've been to Andover Bookstore many times because it's in an area where I have some clients, and it's a beautiful, fantastic, fun, interesting, packed full of wonderful books bookstore, the Andover Bookstore. So the one in the owner is now doing a little test, I think it's about 6-week pilot, to see if Rockport and K-Band can support this new bookstore. And it's right on Main Street. 1A Main Street is the address. It's the brown shingled building with the green trim, the sort of like 1920s green trim. And so, unfortunately, I can't remember the gentleman's name, but...
Can you say what businesses are to the left and right of it for perspective?
Yeah, no, I can't off the top of my head.
Just across the street from it? Is it close to the square?
Yeah, I don't know. We have to Google it. So, let me Google Map. Have you been there? Yeah. No, I haven't.
Oh, okay.
No, it just opened on Saturday.
Okay, I'll Google Map it. You can keep talking.
Oh, okay.
I'll Google Map.
Yeah. So, I think it would be great if we could all, you know, support. Because I know many, many people really miss Toad Hall, miss the idea of Toad Hall. So it would be great to have another community bookstore on Main Street in Rockport. You know, I think especially in the summertime, in Vineyard Haven, on Martha's Vineyard, there's just an incredible bookstore right on Main Street in Vineyard Haven. And if a bookstore's done really well, it just becomes like Mecca. Like you bring your kids to load up on their books for the summer, and you know, I think
it's more of a natural cedar shingle.
It's
right next to the Village Silversmith. Going up towards Shalinloo,
and it's on the right, going
away from Dock Square, very close, diagonally across from Dock Square, and across the street from La Provence and the Tuzinski Gallery.
Yeah, and that's a great little corner there of great little shops.
Yeah, it's
very centrally located.
Oh, so, yes. Yeah. Absolutely
so
it is, yeah.
If he's going to... I wonder if that's where his permanent location would be if he decided to stop. I mean, it's going to be hard to decide to have a bookstore there because after Christmas...
What a beautiful building.
Yeah, after Christmas, right, then... Everything just is dead for a couple months, right? So
I would imagine that it'd be very difficult to pay a rent in that location, but who knows?
Right.
I don't know. The building is beautifully restored architecturally. It has copper gutters, kind of a curved, unbelievable.
It's curved front, right?
Yes, yeah. It is a beautiful, beautiful building. They did a magnificent job restoring that space right there.
Well, so everybody, you know, when you're downtown Rockport, get your children's books there and your, you know.
It'd be nice to support.
It'd be really nice to have a bookstore back.
Shop local.
Yeah.
I think, you know something, I'm going to mention this, and I'm talking completely out of my ass, but I believe that this coming week is Shop Local Week, or it's coming very
soon.
I know Pauline from Pauline's Books has... I'm just gonna quickly go.
Pauline Bresnahan.
Bresnahan from Pauline's.
Gifts.
Yeah.
Not books.
Pauline's gifts. Gifts, yeah, right. Pauline's gifts. Shop local is.
Is it usually the week of? Does it usually begin the week of Thanksgiving? Because this is Thanksgiving week coming up. Thursday's Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's probably right around the same time as. I don't know what the hell it is. I believe it's soon. And if it is, I'm going to ask Pauline Bresnahan to send in a press release for us so we can post it.
Post all that. And also, Present Gloucester has opened, and I think they have beautiful, beautiful gifts there. local craftsmen and artists just make exquisite gifts, and they're there.
Did you do a post closet. About that?
No, I haven't, because...
Someone, I read something about...
I'll do it, well, I mentioned that they were open, but I didn't, I haven't been down to take pictures yet. But I will this week.
And what are they? They're at they open in the Lit House again.
Yeah, they're in the Lit House again. So go back. I did put a little post up, not a big one.
Okay.
Not with pictures yet. I am planning to do one with pictures, and also do cover Alexandra's Bread because she always has wonderful gifts there at Christmas time.
Yeah.
So, and then Backyard Growers has a new space, so there's that little triumvirate.
A new space or expanded space?
An expanded, renovated space. So I want to do that little, you know, trio down there of gift shops.
There
gifts
you go.
And wonderful things for Christmas.
All right, Gloucester. 1 hour on the dot, Kim.
Oh,
1 hour, like 0.000.
So,
how amazing
great.
Is that?
That's great.
GloucesterCast 253 is in the books. Thanks for listening, y'all.